Good morning. Let's be opening our Bibles to the book of Luke chapter 7 as we continue our series called Blink. It's been an amazing worship time together so far. And let's continue as we jump into the Word of God. You know, we've been doing this series, if you're just joining us for the first time or midway through, this is part 5 of Blink, and it's a snapshot of Jesus in the book of Luke. And we've been talking about how fast our minds move. Did you know that our nerve impulses travel to and from the brain at speeds of up to 250 miles an hour? Faster than a Lamborghini, an arrow shooting through the air, a helicopter. That's how many thoughts are flashing back and forth and nerve impulses in your brain even right now. Anyone feel like this week has been a hectic week? Anyone feel like your brain is still going 250 miles an hour? Anyone feel like when you come into church, it's time to relax a little bit, to settle the mind and focus in on what God has planned for us? I hope that's how you feel. You know, the brain moves so fast that sometimes we want everything that we want and we want it now. You know, 46% of Americans are skipping the theater or rental stores, although that's kind of old news now, for the convenience of pirated movies, right? 72% of Americans eat fast food at least once a week. Each year, millions of Americans look for love in 3 to 8 minute speed dating sessions. It's not enough to fall in love, but to fall in love in less than 90 seconds is the goal. In a survey conducted by USA Today, the majority of Americans would not wait in line for more than 15 minutes. Now, I don't think that accounted for New York City. We would probably wait about 2 or 3, and then that's it. 1 in 5 admitted to being rude to someone for serving them too slowly. Now, I moved from California to New York City, and I got used to the amazing service that people provide in most of the places in New York. And when you travel outside New York after being here for some length of time, especially when you're sort of in a suburban world or driving from one state to another and you're in the middle of where there's a lot of space, the service can be a little slower than what you're used to in New York. And I won't ask for a raise of hands, but it's easier to get annoyed or irritated when you're paying good money for something and they look like they're taking their sweet time with it. So what we do today, as we've been doing every week, is trying to focus. Hebrews 12:2 talks about Jesus being this author, this perfecter of our faith. We fixate our mind's eye on him. He's our goal. He's how we're able to live a Christian life in this crazy world where our minds are constantly going. Let's jump in to Luke chapter 7, which is our text today. We're going to read the first 10 verses. When Jesus had finished saying all this to the people who were listening, of course, this is a reference to all that he just said, which was the Sermon on the Mount. So when he was done, he entered Capernaum. Verse 2, there's a centurion's servant there whom his master valued highly. The servant was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders to the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. So Jesus went with them. He's not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to him to say, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I didn't even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I've not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Let's stop there. This man is a Roman centurion, a Roman soldier in the Roman military. And, you know, Rome at this point had not brought the full military power to the area of Capernaum yet. That was until about 44 AD. And so a lot of scholars wonder, why was this guy there? And most likely he was hired by Herod Antipas, who used non-Jewish soldiers at the time a fair amount. So he would hire outside the tribe. It was a little easier to be able to get some things done, especially when you needed the dirty work done. And so he was there before Rome was officially there. So it was a little bit more leeway for him there. Now, a centurion was in charge of 100 soldiers. So it's no little task that he's there, a commander of a large group of people, a large military presence there in the city. And he sends word ahead. Different versions say different things. Some say he talked to him personally. Some say like this, that he sent his guys ahead. And he's asking for a servant to be healed. This is someone I value highly, someone I think is worth it. And I've heard about you, Jesus, this powerful rabbi, would you please come and heal him for me? And what's the crowd's response when they hear this message given to Jesus? Do they like this Roman? Yeah, they do, right? What do they yell out? He what? He deserves this. You see that in the text? He deserves it. Well, why? Well, there's a few reasons given here. I mean, we can assume that there's some belief in God and in Jesus and his rabbinic authority, or else he wouldn't be asking. There's something else that you see in the text, that he basically funded the building of the temple. This guy was a good guy. The people loved him. The people respected him. And even though he's Roman and outside the Jewish culture and religion, they wanted him to be able to get what they thought he deserved. You know, the crowd 2,000 years ago is not so different than our crowd today. When we see that someone's been a good person or has done the work, we naturally feel like there is a claim or an entitlement or a right to deserve something in response, right? When you go and you pay good money for that Whopper, you expect a hot Whopper in return. When you pay for that latte, you expect the latte, and you expect it quickly. We have certain sort of cultural norms that we have come to understand, especially in America, that when we do the work, or we pay the money, or we give the time, something's coming back to us, right? And if we're not careful, we can become entitled in our hearts, where we start to expect things, not only that we don't deserve in a worldly system, but that we shouldn't be seeking after anyway. If we're not careful, we can become like this scene in Finding Nemo, where these birds see fish and they say, mine. We could be like this, where we see something, we want to claim it, we want it to be ours, we feel like we deserve it, we say, mine, 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 and then we go after it with everything that we are, and even when we don't get it, we're still saying, mine, 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 we want it bad. There was a study out of Cornell that was done, it's called the Stale Popcorn Study. They gave stale popcorn in different portions to moviegoers that participated in the study. And they found that when they gave stale popcorn in bigger portions, people ate more. You say, what? Of course. If you give me more, I'm going to eat more. Well, wait, not so much, of course. If you're hungry, you eat until you're full, right? But in entitled culture, if you're given more, you take more. In fact, 34% more. You see different posts online, on Facebook, here an Instagram post of a young kid on a train, and someone took a picture of this guy, this young man, with his feet up on the MTA, you know, New York subway, and you can see sort of the side of a person standing there that may have liked to sit down on the chair, but he's taking up the seat all to himself. Hey, he needs to be comfortable on his ride. It's interesting that we become so used to high-speed internet, even internet at all. Some of us remember a time when there wasn't internet. Remember that? All right, well, we're a mixed-age church. Some of us remember, some of us don't. Some of us are digital natives. Some of us are digital immigrants. We've come to it. All right? That's just the language of the tech world. And how fast is fast enough? You know, after 3 seconds of waiting, 50% of people will abandon that particular website. I cannot wait any longer. 6 out of 10 people are like, forget it. 3 seconds is too long. Another post on Instagram. This is a picture of a polluted beach after spring break because everyone thought someone else is going to clean up after me. But of course, why would I clean up after myself? You know, and people can start to blame generations. You know, Time came out with magazine cover, the me generation. And, you know, the millennials can be blamed for this this kind of self-focus, self-aggrandizing way of living in a bubble. But then, you know, the millennials, they fight back and say, wait a minute. And there's some articles that came out like the most entitled generation isn't millennials, it's baby boomers. All right, some people are happy about that article. Another millennial wrote, the myth of the millennial entitlement was created to hide their parents' mistakes. It's not our fault. It's your fault. We start getting in the blame game. Who's entitled to what? No, we work harder. No, we work harder. Oh, it's harder for me to get a job. I have to walk farther to my school. No, I had to walk farther to my school. We go back and forth. And if we're not careful, we can care so much about the big picture. Well, that's America. That's outside of my world right now. But we need to be asking ourselves, what about me? What about me? Am I entitled? Do I have that nature in me where I feel like I deserve it and I deserve it now? This is a question that we're going to be asking ourselves for our time together. You know, for me personally, I grew up without a lot of money. I grew up in a poor family. Dad was trying to get his school degree. Mom was taking care of the kids. And we were all just scrapping to make it by and living in low-income housing. And I was happy for the most part, but I had made a decision in my heart, you know, I'm not going to be like this. My generation is going to be different. And I had all these big dreams. And I remember one time I had a lot of different jobs growing up. One of them, at the age of 10, I was a soccer referee for younger kids, 5 and 6 year old kids. Of course, I was 10. I was much older and wiser, so I could referee their games. And I felt so empowered with that whistle in my mouth. And I made 10 bucks a game. I was making bank back then. And I remember after a few weeks, I thought, man, I'm worth more than this. I'm a good player. I'm better than the other referees. I should be getting 15 a game. I thought about it in my head as I was going home that day. Man, I got to talk to my boss, see if I can get more money. And as I'm walking, I look over to the side of the road and kind of crumpled up next to the sidewalk where I met the road. I saw what looked like money crumpled up. I thought, it's probably just a leaf, an old leaf. And then I look a little closer and I start walking towards it. I think that's crumpled up money. And I'm looking around and I go down. It's a $20 bill. I was so happy. And I didn't look around to see if anyone dropped it or take it to anybody. I put that thing in my pocket and started running. That's my money. And I started thinking, you know what? I deserve that money. Because here I am working hard, not getting what I deserve. And I got to do all this stuff with the money and I don't get an allowance and I got to work for anything I have. This was meant to be. That's my money. And if someone came up to me and said, hey, I just dropped that, I would say, finders, keepers. And I'm fast. As a little guy, I could run. So I was ready. Now you say, well, John, I'm sure you've grown up out of that 10-year-old mentality. You're so different now. You don't think like that anymore. I told a story when I first moved to New York. I was hanging out with Sheridan Wright, one of the most righteous men that I know. And we were walking through the subway, and we saw a wad of 20s on the ground. And he was walking about a step ahead of me. He was sort of leading me through the city, teaching me about the world of the subway. And he looks down and sees the wad. And I look down and see the wad. And he keeps walking. And I say, hey, did you see all that money? He said, yeah. I said, shouldn't we pick it up? He goes, someone else probably needs it more than us. And he keeps walking. I'm looking back. That thing was thick. That had to have been at least 20. I mean, it was a lot of money. Hundreds, maybe more than 1,000. And sure enough, I'm looking as I'm, oh man, oh. Because, you know, share, you can't pick it up after he said that. So someone's walking behind us and they're sort of seeing us see it and hearing us talk about it. And as soon as we move on, they swipe it up. And I remember the guy coming up to us to share it and said, hey, here's $80 because I appreciate it. And I'm going to just give you some of that money. And Sharon's like, no, no, no. And he's like, no, no, I insist. And he put the big wad in his pocket and kept going. And Sheridan, he said, well, Hope Worldwide's going to get a little extra tonight because we were on our way to Wednesday night. That's just Sheridan's mentality. Okay, back to me. I had ordered some equipment from B&H on 9th Ave and 34th. B&H is amazing. Love all of their equipment. Most of the equipment we have on stage. And they always get a kick out of me because all the Jews work there. And they're always like, what are you getting all this equipment for? I said, church. And they're like, well, but are you Jewish? You kind of look Jewish. I said, of course I'm Jewish. And then most of them like rub their yarmulke and say, wait a minute. And we have a great conversation. They're very fascinated by that. And so I ordered some equipment from B&H and they said, okay, it's going to be there Thursday. And I was leaving town Friday morning. I was going to be gone for the weekend. I was really excited that it was all going to come in. I didn't want a bunch of expensive equipment in the lobby or whatever because it might get stolen. So Thursday came and went. And I see an email come in at the end of Thursday. Sorry, you're not going to get the stuff. It's going to come in tomorrow afternoon. So I'm online and chat and phone trying to get a hold of people and talking to UPS and, you know, B&H. I think they might have been in their Sabbath already, so they didn't answer the phone. I forget when I called. But anyway, I'm on the phone with UPS and I'm trying to figure out, wait a minute, you promised me that it was going to come Thursday. And they said, well, no, actually, sir, we didn't promise you. It was an estimate. I said, no, let me send you what you wrote to me. You said it's coming Thursday at the end of the day. And then I get an email later saying it's coming Friday afternoon. I'm going to be out of town and all, you know, I'm worried about it getting taken. It's not going to work. How can we fix this? Sorry, sir, we can't fix it. I said, can you tell me where it is right now? Because I live only a few blocks away from B&H. Can I just grab it or is it in a garage somewhere? And it was a lot of equipment. So they were going to ship it. But now I'm like, I'm desperate. I need to get that equipment. They're like, no, actually, it's way upstate. Let me get this straight. I ordered equipment from a few blocks away. It's upstate right now, and then it's going to come back? Yeah, that's just the way it works. Sorry, sir. And I am angry now. For the church. God needs this equipment. B&H and us, we understood each other. Now UPS messing everything up. You gonna give me a discount or something? No, sir, we're not gonna give you anything. So there I am again, grown a lot from my 10-year-old self. I did laundry that night, had a couple of loads doing the kids' laundry, and I'm changing from the washer to the dryer, right? So I'm getting all the wet clothes, and I'm putting in two different dryers, and you know, some people, they don't clean the lint out after they're done with the wash and the dryer. Of course, all of you guys clean the lint out when you're done with the dryer. And you don't throw litter on the ground and expect someone else, right? You take care of that because that's just the right thing to do. But when I come to the laundromat, I find myself always cleaning out like pink and purple and brown, all kinds of nasty hair and lint. But I don't want that in my clothes, so I got to get that. So I'm cleaning it out, and then I put my dryer sheets in. And I load one of my wet loads up into the dryer, and I'm about to put the other load into the dryer that's waiting for me that I just cleaned and put the dryer sheets in. And a woman had decided that she was going to put her wet laundry in first. So as I'm in the process of putting it in, I'm sort of startled. Where'd she come from? And she had already taken my two dryer sheets, looked at them, and started cleaning up and trying to throw them out. In the trash. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Those are mine. And she kept doing what she was doing. She had long hair. I didn't realize she was listening to her headphones. you know, blocking the world out. He says, sorry, ma'am, those, and she's, oh, what? Sorry, those are my dryer sheets. I'm just trying to put my clothes into my dryer. She looked around. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, excuse me. And I wasn't sure if she was just startled and really sorry or whether she was like, your dryer, really? And I didn't say you owe me two dryer sheets, but that's all right. And we went into silent mode for a little while there because I don't think either of us wanted to say anything after that. I'm confessing my sin, all right? You guys never fall into this trap. I know. Thank you, right. Clap for the minister, he's a sinner, great. You know, I have a feeling, though, that sometimes in Christ, we can get real entitled to. And, you know, I know we interact with the world. We have our ups. We have our downs. We have our victories. We have our defeats. We have our little. We have our big. But sometimes, as followers of Jesus, we can get into an entitlement spiritually where we expect God to answer all of our prayers faster than we can log on to Google. Boom, right now, God. And when we don't get it, is there an angel issue, a UPS delivery issue going on right here? Figure it out, Michael. Aren't you the archangel? Figure it out, Gabriel. I mean, who's messing it up? I got 7 emails by the time I haven't even got my prayer answered. We say, oh, if we pray, we read, we share, we give, we're going to get what's coming to us. We can start stretching scriptures about God gives all that the heart desires and refresh others and you'll get refreshed. We love those, but we forget about you won't get what you pray for unless you pray with the right motives and the heart is deceitful above all things. And that the Bible balances itself out. So what's the verdict? Well, we do things, we need to decide to do things because they're right, not because of what we're going to get in return. Now, there's no need to be extreme. I know if you're imagining a line, a spectrum on the one side, it's like, well, fine, I'll just be lazy then because it doesn't matter. No. And you can't go to the other side either where you work so hard to try to earn the grace. Not going to work. You got to find the Jesus balance. And there are times sometimes where you do have a claim to something and it's legitimate, rational, it makes sense. But the question you got to ask yourself is, should I? Okay, you put in the work. I understand you expect a paycheck or whatever it is. It's not wrong to think like that, but we're trying to figure out where spiritually our hearts are at. Have we become so expectant that we don't have a grateful attitude for what we get anymore? More popcorn, more. And Jesus lifts the centurion up for living like he doesn't deserve it. Living grateful, asking in faith and for the right reasons. And you know, if you think back, Jesus, does he heal every sick person that he sees? No, he doesn't. He says, the poor and needy are always going to be among you. That's not why he came, to sick everyone, to heal everyone that was sick, to heal all the diseases. He came to bring spiritual freedom. And along the way, God came into a lot of situations through miraculous works that he did. But we have to be careful that we don't expect that everything we want is going to happen. You know, God knows that there's some prayers I prayed I'm very glad he did not answer. Can you think of a couple? Yes. Prayers, you God, please. 10 years later, why did I pray that? I'm so glad it didn't happen. And sometimes there's character lessons I never would have learned if it all came easy. It's time for some of us to decide that the life that we have is the life that God has given, and it's our job to be content. Contentment is a decision, not a circumstance. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 14, if you have your Bibles there. If not, you can look on the screen. In Luke 14, there's a follow-up passage, verse 8 through 11, that continues to talk about this idea of entitlement and humility. When someone invites you to a wedding feast, don't take the place of honor. For a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. If so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. Then humiliated, you'll have to take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place. So when your host comes, he'll say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you'll be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. I'm sure some of us can relate to that last statement, times where we have tried to prop ourselves up at work or in a relationship or with a project. And you found when you work so hard to present your best self, sometimes it backfires on you. You know, we don't need to take the place of honor. We have to allow it to be given to us by God. No need to force it. God will set up the timing. And when it's clear, then you take it with gratitude. Mark Twain has a great quote, says it's better to deserve honors and not have them than to have them and not deserve them. You know, in the end, what would you rather your legacy be? That you were never satisfied and always ambitious for more, never content, always driving, or that you were content with God's provision and everything else was a bonus or a free lesson in character? Another great quote from Augustine, how greedy is the man or woman for whom God is not enough? At some level, as those of us who are children of God have decided to follow Jesus, as we just sang in that song, Christ is enough for me. My salvation is priceless. And whatever the circumstances, whatever injustices, I know that if I live this life, God is with me. I follow him to the end, and I'll be with him in eternity. You know, I want to share with you an example of this. I don't know if any of you have caught this online, but it's a documentary series called The Kindness Diaries. And this gentleman, originally from England, now lives in L.A., decided that he was going to quit his finance job, did really well in the finance world, made lots of money, and just felt like it wasn't satisfying. And he was doing things that were violating his conscience. He was done. And one of the decisions he made coming out of that world was he wanted to prove that there was still kindness on our planet. Because every time he turned on the news, every time he talked to people, it was always terrible stuff. He says, is there kindness in the world still? So he got himself this little, I don't know what you call it. It's a motorcycle with a little side thingy. And he decided with a small camera crew to travel the world with this motorbike, and he decided that he was going to depend totally on the kindness of strangers for food, shelter, and gas in his tank. He wasn't allowed to take any cash, only kindness in the form of these different ways. And so he travels, and he goes around the world, and it's like this 10 or 12 episode series that we've been watching with the kids lately. And I want to show you a clip from one of the episodes that really meant something to me when it came to this idea of entitlement, humility, and generosity. Here he lands in Pittsburgh and shares about meeting someone named Tony.
...into the path of a man called Tony.
Can I live in your house tonight?
Unfortunately, I don't have a house. I'm homeless right now. If I did, you'd be more than welcome there, because I've always opened my door to strangers in the past.
What took you to the streets?
Me and my wife separated, stayed together 16 years in marriage, went through a very bitter separation, and after trying to reconcile, and it wasn't working out very well.
So you've been on the streets for a year?
A year and a few months, yeah. You're welcome to come over there and sit around and rest or eat something if you're hungry or whatever.
You seem like someone with a very kind heart.
I was raised that way. Believe in God, believe in nature. You know.
If your friend's willing to have me in their camp, then I will come stay in your camp.
Well, we would appreciate that. In fact, we'd enjoy it.
That's all you have in the world?
Oh, that's it. And my laundry needs washed right now, but...
You, Tony, was about to open my eyes to a world I knew nothing about.
As you see, it's not much. Here's my bed over there. But if you want to sit down and rest or whatever, if you're hungry, I think you got some food somewhere around here. And we're not real materialistic. We just want to live and survive. But you can have all the money in the world, you're not going to be happy. I mean, millionaires commit suicide all the time.
Tony had no idea how great a truth he had just touched upon.
This is actually a pretty comfortable bed, wasn't it? If you care about underwear, so you're
going to... Are you sure?
I'm positive. I have extras. Yeah, because you may need to change on your journey.
I definitely do need to change.
Okay, I don't know what kind you like, so I can give you a suit. Thank you.
guy has nothing. And he's letting me stay with him in his home. He's introduced me to his friends. It's rare that I'm lost for words.
In the end, regardless of circumstance, we sat there as equals, discussing what all humans have in common, our love for our families and the desire for happiness.
I go back and borrow Matt's bug spray and I spray the corners of the walls with it. Try to get me back in my life. That's what's wrong.
As I drifted off to sleep, I couldn't help but think about my new friend Tony and his very gentle soul. Although he himself was someone in great need of help, all he seemed to speak about was helping those he felt were worse off than him, even though he was literally living on the street. In the morning, I took Tony for a scenic ride in Kindness One as a thank you for his generosity. Little did he know that was only the beginning of my thanks.
So, Tony.
Yes.
You know how I told you I was relying on the kindness of strangers around the world?
Yes.
That was only part of the truth. People that help me a tremendous amount and that give me kindness purely from their heart, I try and repay that. First of all, we want to put you up in a house. And secondly, we want to enroll you in some kind of certificate program where you can get a degree and make your way again in life.
I don't know what to say right now. Appreciate it. Thank you. I try to help people get up. Even though I'm sinking deeper, I try to pick them up. Nobody's ever really helped me before. You know, I mean, it's small stuff, but nothing. This is like monumental. Did you go to school again? Yeah. Thank you. It makes you feel so good, you know. It's like you just never know where your blessings are coming from. You just never know.
Maybe a hug.
And I tell people just be nice to people. It's like the most important thing. And I think God's answered my prayer right now.
Tony's laying down in his bed. He says, quite comfortable. Smile on his face. Comes out with the clean underwear. Hey, do you want this? Giving with no expectation in return. And I love that. I love that there's not a materialism, not an entitlement. And then when something comes, he's grateful. He's grateful. And I think that's amazing because that's when I think we can turn around our hearts and become truly generous. When we get to a place like Tony or like the centurion where we're grateful for what we have, content, not expecting anything in return. And then when God does something, we can easily be generous because we're not hoarding and holding on to all the little things we got. And we've seen examples of people with very little, but they're holding on tight to what they got, right? Tony's not like that. You know, as I think about this lesson, I couldn't help but think about John 8. And there's one more verse I want to share with you in John chapter 8, 34 through 36. You know, if there's anyone that was truly entitled, it was Jesus himself. He deserved it, but he didn't take it. He was the Son of God, didn't demand his rightful inheritance of the power over the earth. He died for us. And it says in verse 34, truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. You know, slaves are not entitled to anything. The slave or the servant that was working for the centurion wasn't entitled to anything. And we have to remember, we've been slaves to sin. We have no rightful place in the royal family of the divine. But Jesus steps in. He opens it up. We're adopted by God the Father. And then he provides us an opportunity for forgiveness. No way else can we get it. And then we're free. I think about Jesus and the centurion. When they cross paths, Jesus is doing something more than just healing his servant. He's challenging all of Israel to be more faithful. I think for us today, he's challenging us to be more faithful as well. To believe that he's going to take care of things. He's going to do his will on the earth, and our job is to be content with our lives. And I think it's to imitate this Gentile. Can you imagine being a Jew in that day and age and Jesus saying, this Gentile has more faith than everybody. Imitate him. And it's the fulfillment of the Sermon on the Mount. What's the Sermon on the Mount? All those people that don't deserve it are going to get it. And then boom, there's the example. And that's what happens. So I pray that we don't continue to add to the entitled states of America. Amen? That we fight it when we're, annoyed when things don't go exactly as planned, but that we don't allow that to become an attitude of the heart, lacking in gratitude, being selfish, and claiming all our rights in the world and in the church. I think too many of us, we blink and we miss the satisfaction that we're so desperately seeking because we don't allow God to settle us here and now and be present in the moment. Let's be like Tony and give even when we have so little. Let's be like the centurion and approach the Lord with faith and not demands. He's not a genie in the bottle. And let's be like Jesus, who gave up all his rights for us so we could be free and help others be free as well. Let's stand and sing one final song. Amen.